Accession number 27338, Reel 7.
This is the fourth reel of a taped interview with Joan Dowson in her home in Perth, Western Australia, on the 20th of the 5th, 2004, for the Imperial War Museum in London, and the interviewer is John Bannister. Joan, we were talking obviously about the experiences that you were having relating to the Battle of El Alamein. I wanted for us to talk, if we could, and you mentioned that there were 1,100 prisoners and people looking after them. How long was it before the workload started to ease up, do you think?
Well, only when we arrived in Fremantle and when we went home on leave.
Okay. Presumably, you mentioned, obviously, the wounds that men were to receive, and you'd experience people, obviously, with major wounds and serious wounds. But it wasn't all wounds. It was other things as well, I understand. What other illnesses and that sort of thing were soldiers prone to suffering from?
Well, they had measles and mumps. And, of course, there were a lot of eye injuries.
Why eye injuries?
I don't know really what happened, but I can remember them. Some of the boys used to tease them when they were feeding them, and they thought that was a bit cruel.
What sorts of things did
they
tease?
By suggesting that they were giving them the wrong food. They knew that they were teasing them. But when you think of it, it sounds pretty cruel.
You're mentioning, obviously, when you first got there, men from Tobruk, and I did want to talk to you about the situation of those chaps who'd been in Tobruk for a long time. What sorts of physical ailments were they suffering from, generally?
Well, as far as we saw, they were fairly fit still.
People talk of lice, people talk of malaria even. Did you experience any?
We had lice, I mean, and bugs, of course, and malaria, but there wasn't as much as New Guinea.
Okay, we'll talk about that when we get to New Guinea. But how could lice be combated?
I don't really remember. If you're in one ward, you're generally sort of stuck to your wards and treated your own patients. And then you'd be moved, of course, but they were general illnesses.
Had you heard much of the situation throughout the rest of the war and what was going on? You mentioned, obviously, earlier on Japan. There wasn't much you could do. But given now that Rommel had been defeated, or was on the run at least, and the Americans were coming in from the west.
Yes.
What was the level of concern amongst you and your friends to get home and maybe help out in other ways?
Well, we were still with the boys, the 9th Division. They were very upset at coming home just after they'd worked so hard in Tobruk, and they had them on the run and they wanted to complete the job. So we were very upset that we were withdrawn, more or less. It was quite right, I suppose, because Australia needed them. But that was a feeling. But they had a brilliant parade. We weren't able to see it because it was in Gaza. No, not Gaza, away from us, where we couldn't have leave. But it was the most wonderful parade they had. And the men were pretty fit then, because they turned out trumps.
You have actually written a poem that's in a particular book, and I was wondering whether you might be able to read it to us, describing to us some of the events of an average day, for instance, or one particular day that you remember.
Well, a special day was written by one of our members. She wrote the story in her own inimitable way, and she wrote a story about me when I visited number 3 squadron in the desert with a number of other girls. And the poem says, number 3 squadron made famous in 42 in the western desert with important job to do. An invitation received for a group of VAs to visit their camp, one of my memorable days. Air Force battle buggy picked us up in the early morn, travelled to Alexandria shortly after break of dawn, towards Amaria across the desert waste, wind rising, sand blowing, no idea of what we'd face. Past numerous convoys and important points of watering, were told about minefields and various things we were seeing. The wind increased in strength, a sandstorm was coming, objects obliterated, giving odd, weird feeling. Arrived at the mess, but how I don't know, past thousands of tents it seemed, no road to follow. 2 tents formed the mess, the trailer was the kitchen, all cooks throughout the forces were absolute magicians. Exclamation mark. Had pre-drink and listening to them chatting about Killer Caldwell, who to them was so inspiring. The pilot from Sydney who became Australia's ace with his accuracy and daring and fearless flying pace. Vivian Warwinkle's brother was one we met that day, the nursing sister, so well known for the courage she did display. She had a letter to her mother, written by her pilot son, about the VA's visit and how he longed for news of home. We were driven in a jeep to watch activity going on, climbed into Kitty Hawk and fired a Tommy gun, visited the workshops and where all records kept, driving in jeep, clouds of dust behind were felt. Saw the planes ready for takeoff on a mission, watched Shark Squadron leaving, an indescribable sensation. The anxious watch and waiting, such relief when they returned. The counting of the planes, silence and all in confirmed. How little did those pilots know of what the future held, the dedication of those lads as enemy planes they repelled. 1942 on the 14th of September is a day in my life I will always remember.
And what's that book that you're reading from?
Well, it is an anniversary book written for the VADs when we had an anniversary, 1941 to 1991, the time was taken, a time to reminisce.
You were mentioning, obviously, earlier on, things like lice, things like malaria, the various sicknesses that the soldiers could get. How was your job made more difficult by the location, the weather, the sand? You mentioned sandstorm. And you mentioned that you were in tented wards. How was your job made harder by those conditions?
Well, they were made... the organisation was very good. We didn't seem to... We seemed to have enough water and enough supplies. So I think that didn't worry us very much.
But what of the heat? What of the sand?
Well, you just had to put up with that, yes. I mean, it just made you miserable, but... And the trenches, of course. Some of the girls missed and fell in them coming home.
You mentioned, obviously, sandstorms. And people talk of sandstorms in the desert. You mentioned these wards, the tent wards. How was it easy to keep a tent ward clean, for instance, given the conditions?
Yes.
big were the tent wards, and how many men roughly would there have been in the tent ward?
I would, from memory, think there are about 30. And we have one place we had four wards, so that meant 80 altogether. Separate wards. And of course we had Italian prisoners of war in there too.
I was going to ask how they were seen, given the fact that they had been the enemy not that long before and they were now POWs working or being made to work. How were they treated?
Well, they were treated very well. We thought they were treated better than we were because they had definite hours on duty and then they had to be back in barracks. And we had to move one camp where we had concrete floors to let the Italians in, and we didn't think that was very funny.
How did the Italians act in your presence?
Oh, very discreetly. They had to be careful. We had no trouble that I know of. Except I had a record once, Vini Vini, an Italian song, and the prisoner of war came up a bit close to listen to it more. But otherwise they just did their job, and they were well looked after when they were in hospital too.
My impression is that the Italians didn't want to fight, or that's what I've been told, that they were often, you know, they had no problem giving up when it came to the crunch.
That's right, yes.
What sort of character were they in to work with?
Well, to work with, you only sort of worked with them and got on quite well with them. But they didn't cause any trouble.
Did you speak to them? Were you able to converse?
Well, we didn't speak Italian. So it was difficult to communicate.
Obviously you're keeping hours, you're keeping certain times of the day where you're working. What were the other orders that you needed to adhere to? We talk of soldiers, and obviously they have officers they have to obey. But for a VAD, what was the protocol? Who was your commanding officer? What were the rules and regulations you had to obey?
Well, they were very strict about night time, and we're on duty at night, but. That our leave time was restricted and that we had to be in at a certain hour at night. If we went out, you had to get permission to go out and leave pass. You couldn't just leave the camp.
That's right. Was it difficult to get a leave pass?
They had to ration it out so that they didn't have too many on leave at the same time. So sometimes you were lucky and other times you weren't.
I wanted to talk about, obviously, the coming of the end of your time in North Africa, but you recall a moment during Christmas period. What was Christmas time like in North Africa?
Well, we had...
42.
Well, I think I remember we had a bit of trouble.
What sort of trouble?
In 1942.
That's right.
Find the page.
That's okay. You mentioned here on the Father Christmas came. Tell us about
on a donkey. Just a minute. I'm looking up the wrong.
That's right.
25th.
Well, sorry, you were going to read something from your diary, in fact.
Yes, well, I have on the 25th, Christmas Day, busy all morning, sisters and orderly late, and everyone calling into ward. as we were near the prize. I think it was decoration. And then everybody had tea out, and Santa Claus called over on a donkey. Joan gave me a lovely powder bowl and tucked a petticoat, Morta Diary and Bertha some undies. And all boys went to mess for dining, and we had ours at 1:30. Barbara Clark engaged, and Edna Wells, Curry, and Glad's fighting and making things very unpleasant in the ward.
You mentioned people sort of making things unpleasant in the ward. To what degree was this the result of the sort of general situation? People becoming tired, do you think?
Yes, frustration. I called, the ex-patients called, and I couldn't get rid of him, or he was a nuisance. We gave our other ranks buffet tea in our mess and had to look after them during the evening too. Everything seems extremely futile, and insincere. And I went and I had just kind of.
That's okay. I'm interested that you say that things seemed futile, and my impression is that you. People are bickering and you're getting a bit frustrated with the whole situation.
Yes, well, it was very hard to discipline them when you they misbehaved.
What are thoughts of home given the time of year?
Oh, well, we all thought of home and very homesick. But it didn't affect our work.
But it wouldn't be long before you actually were on your way home. Can we talk about what you recall of coming back to Australia and the process that that took?
Yes, we were very anxious to get home, and a sense of relief being out of the intense battle area.
To what degree were you sort of proud of the job that you've been involved with, given that, you know, things had gone well there?
We didn't think that way. We just went on doing our duty. And the girls were immediately put onto duty with the patients in the war. There were still a lot of patients on the ship. And that's when I was lucky, because I was involved with ballet. But the girls used to suffer from the motion of the ship when they were nursing, and you'd have to leave the door open because they'd rush in and feel tummy upset.
Given the fact that you were leaving North Africa, given the fact that you were on your way home, what was the sense of anticipation? What was the sense of excitement on leaving?
I think we're all delighted to be on our way.
Presumably there were thoughts of the Japanese, and you weren't necessarily going home to a peaceful Australia.
Well, I don't think we realised quite what was happening, because our service had been taken over by the AMRAs, and we had to go to a rookie's course, which was rather humiliating, and then put on different duties which we weren't accustomed to.
Tell us about the route home. How did you come back?
If you wait a minute, I can look.
Well, I know, for instance, that you came back through India. Am I right?
Well, we didn't. We only went in to refuel in this harbour. It was the first time I'd seen yachts with red sails. and there were many yachts out. I've probably got it on my list here.
I understand there was a connection with India and your husband-to-be. Tell us the story there.
Well, that wasn't then, because that was when I went on the aircraft carrier and we delivered the Indians and
so this was
had a couple of days' leave.
Okay,
but we didn't get off the ship on the way home.
All right. This was when you were involved in Singapore or helping the men return from Singapore. We'll talk about that later. In relation to coming home on... What was the name of the ship?
The New Amsterdam. N-I-E-U-W, I think. Amsterdam.
You've got an excerpt there from your diary. If you could read that from the 18th of February on your return trip home.
There we are on Thursday the 18th. Excitement, ? Nearing land midday. Everyone thrilled at sight of Australian soil. Our pine trees and rot nest. And then packed early, my tummy rotten, and said goodbye to everyone and eventually sent in harbour and dressed ship. And bands were playing on the wharf, I think, and quite a crowd at the wharf, waving and yanks, and I don't know what that is, etc. Saw Esme, that was my close friend, dear kid, through the wire. Joni gave me a lovely photo and said farewell to everyone, and trundled off the ship about 4:30. General Mooreshead, Colonel Hayden said goodbye and the boys cheered. The bus to Claremont Training School and first of our expected landings. Mess gear, what a nice tea, no bed and waiting still at 9 o'clock for pay, etc. Great excitement to see other kids. And they had a good trip. That was from the other ship.
Mm.
Letters from Uncle Fred, Ma, and Alan called in home with gramophone. Tuck and I feel awfully dead and gosh, it's going to be hard as we are now Amherst. Rang Ma and Pa twice and chops for tea. Golly, golly, golly. Awful. 10:10 and we think it's lousy here waiting and waiting as to go home. About PM pay came and waited till after 12 for coupons and tea and sugar coupons to pay, and then we couldn't sleep, so Tuck and I got in together. I can't remember that.
In relation to being back in Australia, what was the feeling like? You mentioned it was exciting to come home, but you also mentioned that you were incredibly exhausted after everything.
Well, I think we were so excited and it was very depressing to have to go into a camp when our parents were living only a few miles away. But then the next morning we had Colonel Mail addressed us in hopes we will rejoin the units, because we had to rejoin the AMWAS. And one of our girls refused to join the AMWAS because her mother was very ill and she was discharged SNLR, which is without honour.
Mm.
and we had a lot of trouble to get her put back because she didn't have to sign the document about the Amherst.
Given your experiences in North Africa, given your time away, had you thought that perhaps you'd had enough?
No. We knew that everything was still going on.
What did it mean to be in the Amwas?
It meant that we had rank and we'd go in as privates and had to salute, which we'd never done in the Middle East. And if you had rank, for instance, I became a corporal, you couldn't nurse, you couldn't go in the wards. You had to get other jobs. So I was fortunate to get one in the X-ray department typing for a brilliant surgeon who had one arm, and he'd lost that in New Guinea when he saved many saved the arms of many men, but he didn't save his own because he couldn't get the tourniquet tight enough.
In relation to the general feeling back in Australia following your return, I understand you were to march through Perth with the 9th Division. What was that like? Can you describe that occasion to us?
Well, can I just look that up?
What was the atmosphere like in Perth, as you recall, the day you marched down St George's Terrace?
Well, we were welcomed very warmly, because the boys were the main attraction, naturally. But we were always well included when the boys were concerned. And I did express disappointment in a lot of occasions at how intense they had been about the war, and yet how little they understood what the boys had been through.
Was that a frustration that was hard to express, given the fact that you'd been away and you knew what was going on and what had happened and how chaps had been treated and how you'd been treated?
Yes, I think so.
Was it difficult to sort of be back in Australia because of that? People just didn't understand?
Yes, I think we felt that too, that all the canteens, or especially in Brisbane when we were there, they'd never serve us, and we went to a shop, they'd serve the Americans, but because they always left tips, but they were really ignored when we wanted anything.
What sort of evidence in Perth was there of a war?
Well, I think the taxis, a lot of them were very difficult. They'd pick up the Americans and not so keen on picking up the Australians, and it made you very disappointed.
What signs of war were there about, other than the fact that the Americans were about?
I think all the patriotic people were involved with different things connected with the war, and also I think they had conscriptions that...
But you were mentioning earlier things like shops. What were the visible signs that there was a war going on the world on your return?
I think it was very real, because we had coupons for clothing and butter, and that means when a friend wanted to get married, you know, she very cleverly had some curtains which she used, and things like that, and it was no elastic. Things were quite hard to manage.
Do you remember things like air raid shelters about the place?
We had one in our garden. Nearly everybody had an air raid shelter, and all the schools had shelters. Modern school dug ditches all over the oval, and I think every school had done something preventative.
What about in Perth, the city?
Look, I really...
What precautions do you remember? Were the windows taped?
Yes. No.
Well, let's talk about
blackout.
That.
And there was a big concrete wall outside the post office and the Commonwealth Bank. There's still got photos of that.
So they'd erected a protective wall outside
the
bank?
Yes, about 4 feet high.
For those who don't know, the post office, the GPO and the bank are one of the main,
yes,
one of the main central buildings in Perth, with Forest Place.